You know, there is a fundamental difference between a tool and a colleague. Like, you pick up a hammer and it just sits there.
Right. It doesn't do anything until you actually swing it.
Exactly. It is entirely inert. But a colleague reads the room. They anticipate what you're trying to build.
Yeah, or they realize you grabbed the wrong nail for the drywall and they just step into help.
Right, and occasionally they just take the blueprint and run with it entirely. Welcome to the Java Rubber Duck Podcast. I'm Alex.
And I'm Jordan.
Today we are examining a massive architectural shift happening right on your laptop. We are like officially crossing the threshold from inert development tools to autonomous digital colleagues.
It really is a massive shift for developers.
Oh, totally. And we have a packed roadmap for you today. We are unpacking Anthropic's monumental Claude Fable 5 release, exploring a fundamental rewrite of the model context protocol, and tackling the very real security threat of autonomous AI agents running wild on your development machine.
Yeah, it is a fascinating time to be building software. We are watching these systems mature from experimental chatbots into persistent, stateful entities that are, you know, embedded directly into the engineering team.
Which is exciting, but also terrifying.
Exactly. Handing over agency to a digital colleague introduces severe architectural and security baggage that requires a lot of unpacking.
So let's jump right into the deep end with our first story. Anthropic just dropped Claude Fable 5.
Huge news.
Right. And looking past the usual release hype, the raw capability benchmarks here just fundamentally challenge how we should estimate software project timelines going forward.
I really do.
Fable 5 is built on their new Mythos class architecture and on SWE Bench Pro, which, if you don't know, is the benchmark for resolving real-world multi-file GitHub software engineering issues. It hits an 80.3% resolution rate.
I mean, that jump in performance is mathematically significant.
It's absurd.
The previous industry heavyweight, Opus 4.8, maxed out around, what, 69.2%?
Right around there.
So moving past the 80% threshold on this specific benchmark means the model isn't just generating clever single-file functions anymore. It is successfully traversing massive repositories.
Right. It's understanding the dependency graph.
Exactly. It's tracking variables across dozens of files and, you know, reasoning through the systemic impact of a change before writing the patch.
The context reasoning is where the stops being a tool and starts being a colleague. Stripe released a case study alongside Fable 5 that illustrates this perfectly.
Oh, I read about this.
Yeah. So they used the model to migrate a 50 million line Ruby code base.
50 million.
50 million lines. Historically, a migration of that scale is just a soul-crushing endeavor. You're talking about mapping deprecated dependencies, handling syntax translations, generating massive suites of regression tests.
It's a nightmare.
They originally scoped it at 5 months of dedicated engineering time, but by pointing Fable 5 at the repository, they completed the bulk of the automated migration in a single day.
A single day instead of 5 months. That's just wild.
It is. It is less like hiring a mythical 1000X senior engineer and more like deploying a dedicated compiler for your legacy business logic.
The Stripe anecdote is compelling for sure, but deploying that business logic compiler comes with a pretty punishing operational expense.
Oh, right. The token pricing.
Yeah. Fable 5 is priced at $10 per million input tokens and $50 per million output tokens. That effectively doubles the baseline cost compared to Opus 4.8.
Ouch. Yeah, that adds up fast.
It does. If you are pointing this model at standard boilerplate generation or simple unit tests, you are burning enterprise budget on tasks a much smaller, cheaper model could handle locally.
Right.
The unit economics basically dictate that you reserve Fable 5 strictly for high-level architectural refactoring.
That premium pricing makes sense, given the underlying infrastructure, I guess. Huh. But I am particularly fascinated by how Anthropic is handling the safety architecture for a model this capable.
It's a big concern.
Because when a model can autonomously rewrite 50 million lines of code in a day, it could theoretically be weaponized to generate, like, highly sophisticated zero-day exploits just as quickly.
Anthropic actually addressed that via specialized routing classifiers. They embedded dedicated cybersecurity and biology classification models directly into the inference pipeline.
Oh, interesting. So how does that work?
Well, when you submit a prompt, these smaller, faster classifiers scan the request first. If they detect that the prompt touches on high-risk, dual-use scientific knowledge or vulnerability exploitation, the system intercepts the payload.
And then it just blocks it.
Not exactly.
Yeah.
It dynamically routes your request away from Fable 5, sending it to the safer, highly aligned Opus 4.8 model instead.
Oh, wow. That dynamic routing is a brilliant architectural compromise.
Really is.
You keep the genius level capabilities unlocked for legitimate massive scale software engineering. But the moment the system detects a malicious vector, it silently downgrades the intelligence of the response to a manageable safety threshold.
Yeah, without failing the request entirely, which is a nice user experience touch.
All right, let's move on to our next story. Up next, we have the largest architectural revision to the Model Context Protocol since its launch, fundamentally changing how AI agents connect to your tools.
This is a really important one for the infrastructure folks.
Definitely. The MCP 2026 roadmap, specifically the July 28 release candidate, was just published. The standout feature here is the transition to a completely stateless session model.
Which is huge.
Now, I understand the general concept of statelessness in web servers, but why is this such a critical bottleneck for AI agents specifically?
So we have to look at how MCP originally maintained context. Before this update, MCP relied heavily on sticky sessions.
Sticky sessions.
Right. When your AI agent connected to a database or an internal API via an MCP tool, it held an active, persistent connection, usually a WebSocket or a long pole handshake, tied to one specific server instance. If you are a massive enterprise trying to scale thousands of autonomous agents, those persistent connections become an absolute infrastructure nightmare.
I can imagine.
Your load balancers are working overtime to keep every single agent pinned to its exact origin server. And if the Kubernetes pod cycles down, the agent instantly loses all of its tool context.
Oh, so the agents were essentially fragile, like any network hiccup, and the digital colleague basically forgets what it was holding in its hands.
Precisely the problem. Moving to a stateless model means they solve the problem of passing agent state metadata.
How so?
Every single HTTP request the agent makes to an MCP tool now carries its own compressed context payload. By eliminating the sticky sessions, any MCP request can land on any server instance across the entire cluster using a plain round-robin load balancer.
That's so much cleaner.
It drastically reduces the memory overhead for hosting these agent networks and makes scaling them almost trivial. Plus, they're layering on standard enterprise controls.
Like what?
Natively supporting OAuth 2.0 validation, comprehensive audit trails, and SSO integration directly into the protocol.
Okay, so the infrastructure relief is huge for DevOps, but the developer experience updates in this roadmap are what really catch my attention.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they are rolling out a new official extensions framework, introducing a concept called MCP apps.
I saw that.
Because previously, the interaction between an agent and a tool was strictly data-driven. The agent asked a question, and the tool returned a raw JSON payload.
Right.
Now, with MCP apps, the server can actually ship interactive HTML interfaces that render directly inside a sandboxed iframe within the agent's chat window.
The implications for internal tooling there are just massive.
They really are.
Instead of your agent just printing out a plain text list of database rows, It can query the MCP tool and return a fully interactive, clickable, charting dashboard.
Exactly. It bridges the gap between text-based conversational AI and traditional graphical user interfaces.
It's a huge step forward for usability. Yeah.
Add to that the maturation of the task's primitive, which gives agents native retry semantics for long-running transient failures. You can see why the adoption metrics are staggering.
What are the numbers looking like?
We are looking at 97 million monthly downloads for the MCP SDKs. Plus, it is now officially governed as a vendor-neutral standard under the Agentic AI Foundation.
Wow.
We are way beyond the experimental phase here. This protocol is officially the fundamental plumbing of the AI-driven internet.
Moving on, the next story is about the dark side of AI automation. The very real security risks of running autonomous agents on your machine and how attackers are changing their tactics.
This is a critical pivot. We just talked about treating AI as a capable colleague, but a rogue or compromised colleague can do vastly more damage than a broken tool.
That is the unfortunate reality.
Anthropic and Minor Reed just published a year-long cyber threat study analyzing 832 accounts banned for malicious activity, and the data is frankly alarming. The attackers have moved entirely past basic phishing campaigns or brute force scripts.
Yeah, the study highlights a specific state-sponsored espionage operation that perfectly illustrates this shift.
Walk us through it.
They measured the attack using the traditional MIRE ATNCK framework. The operation utilized roughly 30 different intrusion techniques.
Okay.
Historically, an attack using those specific methods would score as a medium-risk threat, primarily because executing 30 disparate techniques manually or via brittle scripts leaves a massive noisy footprint.
Right, it gives defenders plenty of time to react.
Exactly. Yet Anthropic assigned this exact same operation a maximum risk score of 100.
100, the absolute maximum.
The mechanism driving that massive risk increase is what they are calling agentic orchestration. Attackers aren't deploying hard-coded bash scripts that fail the moment they hit an unexpected firewall rule anymore.
They're deploying an LLM that autonomously chains attack stages together.
Yes. If an exploit fails, the AI reads the error log, reasons about the network topology, and pivots to an alternative protocol in real time. There is no human in the loop dictating the next step.
It's terrifying. The tactical adaptability of an AI agent just breaks traditional intrusion detection systems.
It really does. It is why NIST is currently rushing to build federal standards for agent interoperability and security.
Right.
But we really need to bring this threat model directly down to the listener's laptop. If attackers are leveraging agentic orchestration to break into networks, developers are using that exact same orchestration to build software locally.
Oh, absolutely.
Docker just published a stern security framework regarding this, and their core thesis is chilling. Developer laptops are becoming production environments.
The concept of securing a local environment isn't new, but Docker's mitigation framework makes sandboxing sound completely non-negotiable.
Because it is.
They mandate four pillars. First, isolation forcing all agents to run inside containerized boundaries so they cannot natively touch the host OS.
Which makes sense.
Second, tool access control, explicitly defining which local MCP tools an agent can actually invoke. Third, identity management preventing the agent from inheriting your developer root credentials.
Crucial step.
And finally, runtime monitoring to log the exact system calls the agent is making.
Those pillars are designed to prevent catastrophic local failures. When you give an AI agent broad file system access and the ability to execute terminal commands, you are introducing a highly non-deterministic entity into a brittle environment.
Okay, I have to play devil's advocate here for a second, because this Docker guidance feels entirely disconnected from the reality of modern development workflows.
How so?
If my agent is tasked with debugging a convoluted Docker-compose networking issue or fixing global NPM package permissions, sticking it inside a locked-down, unprivileged container just neuters its utility.
I see your point, but...
Like, I need my digital colleague to actually touch the system configuration to fix the system. If I wrap my agent in red tape and deny it root access, I am basically back to doing the heavy lifting myself.
The frustration with security friction is valid, I get it.
Yeah.
But treating a non-deterministic LLM like a trusted root user is just reckless engineering.
Is it really that bad, though?
Docker highlighted a specific incident in their report to justify these strict pillars. A developer gave an autonomous agent unisolated terminal access to help clean up some corrupted temporary build files.
Okay, seems harmless enough.
The agent hallucinated the absolute path for the target directory, fell back to a default variable, and autonomously executed an armrf command.
Oh no.
It wiped the developer's entire home directory before they could even hit abort.
That is a very sobering example.
A broken compiler throws an error message. A hallucinating agent with root access destroys the operating system. You wouldn't hire a brand new junior engineer, give them pseudo access on their first day, and tell them to guess where the temp files are stored.
Fair point.
Sandboxing isn't red tape. It is the structural guardrail required to employ non-deterministic colleagues safely.
Okay, shifting gears now. We're looking at Google's push to handle agent infrastructure for you, alongside some ambient AI magic in your IDE.
Managing the local isolation of agents is a massive headache, which is precisely the problem Google is trying to solve with Gemini API-managed agents, which just hit public preview.
Right.
Building stateful agents natively is incredibly difficult. If you try to orchestrate something like CrewAI or LangGraph on your own infrastructure, you are immediately hit with context window memory bloat.
It's a heavy lift.
You have to maintain long-lived process pools, manage persistent vector state stores, and handle the messaging queues between different agent personas.
Honestly, when I think of stateful agents running locally or on basic cloud instances, I just envision runaway memory leaks crashing the entire environment.
Exactly.
So how does Google Sandbox practically abstract that infrastructure away?
They move the entire execution environment into fully isolated Linux sandboxes natively hosted on Google Cloud. You, as the developer, just define the agent's specific toolset, its initial prompt, and its memory parameters. Google's infrastructure natively handles the execution scheduling, the state persistence across multi-step tasks, and most importantly, the automatic failure recovery.
That is super convenient.
It entirely decouples the memory and process management from the developer's immediate concerns.
Shifting the infrastructure burden to the cloud is a great pragmatic win. But for me, the most exciting update in this segment is happening directly inside the editor.
Oh, the Code Assist update.
Yes. Gemini 3.5 Flash is now generally available within Gemini Code Assist. And it introduces a paradigm shift from prompt-driven AI to what they are calling ambient AI.
When you use the term ambient AI, the immediate concern for most developers is that it sounds like those incredibly aggressive, flow-breaking, autocomplete pop-ups we've all learned to hate.
Right, the classic paperclip assistant nightmare.
Exactly. How does this implementation actually differ?
It differs by anticipating intent rather than just guessing syntax. Previously, to leverage an AI colleague, you had to stop writing, open a chat panel, and type out a formal prompt explaining what you wanted to do.
Yeah, breaking your flow.
With the new Next Edit predictions, the system acts more like a just-in-time compiler that reads ahead of your execution thread.
Interesting.
If it observes you changing a core function signature, it doesn't just autocomplete the line. It proactively surfaces the three other files in the repository where that function is called, predicting that you will need to update those call sites next.
That requires deep, real-time repository context.
Exactly. And it culminates in a feature literally called finish changes. It continuously monitors your in-progress keystrokes.
A little spooky.
A little. But if you write a pseudocode comment outlining a complex sorting logic block, the system infers your architectural intent and offers the completed multi-line implementation in line.
Without a prompt.
Without you ever hitting a keyboard shortcut to invoke the assistant. It's like a skilled surgical nurse who hands you the scalpel before you even ask.
It is undeniably a massive leap in developer velocity. But from an architectural standpoint, adopting managed agents and ambient code assist requires a significant trade-off.
You mean vendor lock-in?
Yes. You're trading infrastructure flexibility and local control for Google's managed reliability. You are deeply coupling your team's development workflow and the actual state of your AI agents to their specific proprietary ecosystem.
That's true.
For many organizations, the velocity gained is worth that vendor lock-in, but it's a conscious architectural dependency you have to accept.
Up next, we have a look at the latest updates to the AI developer ecosystem, focusing on lightning-fast code reviews from Cursor and enterprise controls from GitHub Copilot.
Throughout this discussion, we have focused heavily on agents writing code or modifying systems.
Right.
But any engineering manager will tell you the actual bottleneck in a CI/CD pipeline isn't writing the code. It is the human code review.
Oh, absolutely. Pull requests routinely sit in limbo for days, caught in a cycle of context switching as reviewers try to understand the logic.
And both Cursor and GitHub are attacking this specific bottleneck right now.
Cursor's recent update to BugBot, which is their automated code review agent, is a perfect example of removing that context switching penalty.
Yeah, I've been reading about BugBot.
It's now powered by the Composer 2.5 model, and the performance gains are staggering. Previously, an automated multi-file code review took a baseline of about 5 minutes.
Which is already pretty fast.
Right, but they have optimized the pipeline to drop that average down to just 90 seconds.
90 seconds to execute a comprehensive security and logic review on a pull request fundamentally changes the rhythm of a sprint.
The speed is impressive, but the mechanism they introduced to save on ATI costs is even smarter.
How so?
They launched a local review command that runs the BugBot analysis on your machine before you open the PR.
Oh, that's clever.
Yeah, and to prevent double charging you when you finally push the code, they built in duplicate diff detection. Instead of blindly rereading the entire repository every time you submit, the system hashes the abstract syntax tree of your diff.
So it knows what's changed structurally.
Exactly. If that AST hash matches the pre-flight check you already ran locally, it bypasses the API call entirely and instantly posts the prior analysis directly to your GitHub PR.
That AST hashing mechanism is what makes the ROI so compelling for engineering teams.
It really is.
Cursor actually published their economics, stating that running BugBot averages out to roughly $1.60 to $2.40 per bug caught.
That is practically free.
When you weigh $2 against the cascading cost of a production incident, you know, the database downtime, the frantic engineering hours spent debugging, the customer trust lost BugBot's API cost is effectively a rounding error.
Definitely.
It transforms the code review process from a human waiting game into an instant, highly rigorous, automated pipeline step.
However, allowing an autonomous agent to analyze every single line of code in an enterprise repository introduces a massive data ingestion risk.
Yes, the security team's worst nightmare.
If these agents are reviewing the code, they are seeing every hard-coded secret, every proprietary algorithm, and every unpatched vendor dependency.
Which is exactly the enterprise friction GitHub Copilot is aiming to eliminate with their new administrative controls.
Right.
Larger organizations simply cannot allow an AI to ingest repository data blindly.
So what did GitHub do?
GitHub just shipped org-wide runner defaults alongside strict content exclusion rules for Copilot code review.
How do those exclusion rules actually function at the repository level?
They operate by pre-filtering the repository tree before the context window is ever populated.
Mm-hmm.
An organization administrator can define absolute exclusion paths for sensitive directories, generated code files, or specific third-party vendor dependencies.
So the developers can't just bypass it?
Exactly. Because this rule is enforced at the organization tier, individual repository maintainers cannot override it. The AI is definitively blocked from reading, reviewing, or training on that restricted content.
That ensures enterprise-grade governance is mathematically enforced before the agent even boots up.
Precisely.
Taking a step back and looking at the sum of these stories, a very clear narrative emerges today. We are watching AI rapidly transition from a stateless, prompt-driven chat window into a persistent, stateful entity deeply embedded in the software lifecycle.
That's the real takeaway here.
We see it in MCP's new stateless infrastructure allowing agents to scale globally. We see it in Google's ambient IDE assistance predicting our architectural edits. And we see it in Cursor autonomously catching logic bugs in 90 seconds.
The paradigm of software engineering is fundamentally altering. We are no longer simply instructing a tool on syntax.
Right.
We are delegating complex, multi-step responsibilities to systems that can autonomously orchestrate their own execution, remember deep contextual state, and evaluate the security of their own output.
Which brings us back to our opening thought. The hammer isn't just swinging itself anymore. The hammer is drafting the structural blueprints, catching your logical flaws, predicting which nails you need, and actively negotiating with the supplier.
It's a whole new world.
It really is. So I want to leave you with a final thought to chew on as you head back to your terminal. If our tools are now independently reading our code bases, making stateful architectural decisions, catching our bugs, and pushing automated fixes to production, at what point does your job as a developer shift entirely from the act of writing software to the act of managing a team of autonomous digital developers?
That is the defining engineering question of this decade.
Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive on the Java Rubberduck podcast. Keep building, stay curious, and we'll catch you next time.